first week of owning it, and I already have problems with my MacBook Pro.
Ditto on my MacBook.
What the heck is going on?
All this and more, MyMac.com podcast number 90.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
So like we were saying in the bumper at the beginning, yes, Chad has a MacBook, I have a MacBook Pro. We've owned them for a week?
A week.
Just 1 week.
Yes.
It was just the last show that we were unboxing them and going, ooh, pretty cool, ooh.
Correct.
Yeah, and already we've both had a problem. Mine turns out not to have been the MacBook Pro's problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll get into that because mine's pretty involved. So I thought we would start with you because your MacBook actually did have a problem.
Right.
So what the heck happened, Chad?
Well, basically, I was downstairs surfing Sunday and running a little application. I had not installed anything new other than the updates from the updater.
Yep, software updater. Yep. So you got like macOS 10.7.
10.4.7 for Intel.
For Intel. And
yep. Well, everything was running smooth, and all of a sudden the application just disappeared.
It would just crash.
Well, first the application crashed, and then 2 seconds later the entire system crashed.
Kernel panic, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went, what the heck?
What the heck? Tried to bring it back, couldn't bring it back, installed the system disks, found a way to system 10.4.7, told it to use that. Rebooted and everything seemed to be working fine, but then I noticed that my volume keys were not working.
Hmm.
So I couldn't up or down my volume. I thought, well, I'll check my setup and see if there's something wrong with the audio. Check the audio. Will not see the internal speakers.
No matter what, I just wouldn't see them. Like,
it wouldn't
see them. There.
Nope.
So you're like, what the hell is going on?
Exactly.
This is a brand new MacBook. I just opened it 2 days ago and it's not working.
Exactly. So,
a little frustrating.
Yeah. So, you know, got in there, ran my disk permissions. There's no problems with the disk. Did the whole first aid thing. Nothing wrong with that.
And you'd already clean installed it the second time anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I started from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't this working?
Exactly.
Stupid glossy screen. It's the glossy screen's fault, isn't it, Chad?
No, it's not the glossy screen's fault. So I figured, well, the one thing I haven't done is run my hardware diagnostic. So, stuck in the disk, ran the diagnostic, sure enough, come up with a problem.
Stuck in the disk, discovered the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Problem error was...
I'm going to change my name to Perry Como, by the way.
Are you?
Actually, that should be you, Perry, Chad Perry.
Yeah, that's right.
Chad Perry Como.
Well, basically, it was a mem error. Hardware, which of course is memory. So I called up Apple support, talked to Justin. Justin was very helpful. And basically we'd pretty much figured that the issue was...
bad RAM chip.
Yeah. After we'd pulled out the battery, held down the start key, reset the power distribution to make sure everything was going in the right direction, and put the battery back in. And basically that was it. So when I talked to
Justin...
That's
like your fifth basically, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just keeping track for everybody at home.
Well, I'll try to keep...
Why does he keep saying basically, Dad?
I will try to keep it simpler than...
He keeps saying basically. This doesn't sound basic to me.
So Justin said he would send me a stick of RAM to try with.
You the man, Justin. You the man. I don't care what Chad was saying about you earlier before we started recording. You the man.
I talked to him yesterday about 5 o'clock, and by the time I came home today, my RAM was in.
So they wasted no time getting a new RAM.
No, and he said, it should be. You should have it tomorrow, if not sometime in the next 5 days. Sometimes it takes a little longer, he said, but sure enough, today it was in.
Next day, yeah.
So... basically did my check on my RAM, found out that, yes, it was a bad RAM chip, installed a new one, and I'm up and running again.
Well, that's cool. Have you had much of a chance yet to really test it, or everything seems to be hunky-dory?
Everything's hunky-dory so far. I haven't really run any applications
yet. But you didn't have to. You didn't do another clean install.
No.
Okay, so it's still the same OS as you were using.
And actually, I never did a full clean reinstall of anything.
Oh, okay.
I just... use the system disk to try to get it past the boot up screen because I was having so many problems.
It was hanging there too long.
Oh, yeah. I was getting the whole black screen flashing.
Well, it's nice to know that, you know, did you call 1-SOS Apple or whatever?
Yes, I did. 1-800, whatever there
is. SOS Apple, yeah. It's nice to know that they took care of you. I mean, it's a brand new MacBook, so, I mean, there's no question that that it could have been anything you could have done.
Right.
Did you throw out there that, you know, you're at mymac.com or?
No.
No, see, I always name drop.
See, I never name drop. I always want to see what kind of service do I get if I'm Joe Average.
Oh, I'm like a press whore. I throw it out there. Do you know who I am? And I tell them and they go, does that mean anything?
Well, no, but it's supposed to, but it really doesn't.
Well, I thought I'd spare myself the ego deflation and just play stupid. So
there's been a few times that I've name dropped and it actually worked.
Really?
Yeah. So, of course, then I get the real big ego for a while. I can attest to the fact that sometimes Apple sends stuff out like that fast because I had, you know, the PowerBook G4 that I had was 1 gigahertz. What was it, titanium? What is it? Everybody's going, no, I know what that is. Not titanium.
Which one, the black one?
No, that was the PowerBook G3.
Oh.
My last PowerBook, the one I've been using.
Yeah.
Aluminum book.
The aluminum book.
Alu-book, I guess they call it. And it was one of the ones that had the battery recall. Mm-hmm. I had that dangerous battery that, you know, Al-Qaeda put in Apple Supply, and it could potentially kill millions. And there are little tiny weapons of mini destruction instead of mass destruction. And so, you know, I just did it online. I put in my battery serial number, and it said, yeah, that one's been recalled. Put in my actually, it had all my shipping information from when I registered the product.
Yeah.
Boom, the very next day, I get a box with the new battery. I put my old battery in it, close it, call the number that's on the box for, I think it was DHL.
Yep,
they came
DHL.
And picked it up, and boom, it was done. I mean, it was that fast.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is great. I mean, it was literally less than 24 hours, because when I filled it out online, it was like 8:30 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got my RAM, or when I got my battery the next day, it was before, it was like 9 o'clock in the morning. So, I mean, it was less than 13 hours, and from when I filled out the form until I got it. I thought, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, now, Apple is in West Coast time zone, but still, to get it there that fast, I was very impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Some people obviously don't have the best of luck when it comes to customer support.
Right.
We'd really like to hear from any of our listeners out there who've had problems with tech support. Not necessarily Apple, but maybe it's a software company.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's another hardware company. Preferably if it's Dell. but, you know, we'd love to hear your horror stories. You can send us an email chronicling the misadventures of your support call hell.
Mm-hmm.
Or call our phone number.
1-801-938-5559 is our Skype answering system.
I think everybody likes to hear the horror stories. It's nice to hear the good, that worked out well.
Yeah.
But I think secretly people want to read the ones that are just like, oh, I can't believe they did that to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Let's start a protest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WalmartSucks.com, you know, that kind of reaction that you get from well, kooks like us, basically. but yeah, I'd love to hear some horror stories. We've actually played those little clips in the past of bad support calls.
Mm-hmm.
When, of course, that was from the other side, that the tech support has to deal with a complete moron.
Right.
So we do have a new segment this week. It's from David Cohen, and I want to jump into that real quick. This is cool. I hope David can contribute more regularly to the podcast. One thing I did want to talk about before we get into it is the fact that we are definitely going to move the smaller segments that's on the podcast right now into a second podcast that we're going to create, and it's going to be called the My Mac Mini Podcast.
Yep.
I actually created one already, and it was more or less a demo that I played for Chad, and he was like, yeah, that works. And I think it's going to be a good idea. It's going to cut down on the overall time of our podcast.
Right.
And it will allow us to have a little bit more time for either the news, interviews, whatever the topic happens to be that week. This week, by the way, we have no interview.
Right.
We have no contest.
No.
Why the hell are people listening?
Well,
to listen to David Cohen.
Ah.
Hello. My name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, a new segment on the MyMac.com podcast. What I'm going to be doing is talking about the joys, trials, and tribulations of using a Macintosh in, around, or near a Windows environment. Like it or not, it's a very Windows world out there, and those of us who have committed to our Macintoshes will find that we have to share data, share files, connect our Macs to Windows networks and Windows computers at various points throughout our professional and private lives. What I'm going to try and do in this segment is talk about some of the things that you can do to make that a little bit easier. Just one rider, this is not just going to be about Intel Macs. Obviously, the new Intel machines make it a lot easier to work with Windows, as you can actually run Windows on these machines. But I appreciate that there's an awful lot of people out there who don't have access to an Intel Mac just yet, haven't been able to upgrade, or don't want to upgrade and want to stick with the old PowerPC or older machines. I'll try and make sure there's things in here for non-Intel Mac users as well, and this first tip I'm going to give you is a good example. There are plenty of instances where you need to be able to run Windows or Windows-specific software, even though you might be using a Mac as your principal machine. In a corporate environment, this can be particularly important, because you'll often find that corporations or large companies have specific custom software that's appropriate to their business and that only runs on Windows machines. Accessing these pieces of software, if you're a Mac user, can be quite a challenge. Intel Mac users can have a go at running Windows locally, but PowerPC users are stuck with VirtualPC, which isn't a great piece of software, purely because the performance it gives you is not normally good enough to run most pieces of software effectively, unless you have a very powerful Mac. But there are alternative ways of doing this. One way is to use thin client technology. With the thin client, the processing and the interface, in fact everything that Windows does on a machine, doesn't actually run locally, it runs on a central server. Sessions are interacted with over the network using thin client software that sends keystrokes and mouse input up to the server and gets back from it changes in the display as you work on the system. Sounds complicated, but in reality, on a fast network, you get performance just as if you were working locally on the machine, even though you're actually talking to a server in the server room. The beauty of these systems is because the processing is all remote, they're pretty platform agnostic, and you can get a client that runs on a Mac OS X system. The two big providers of thin client technology in the Windows world are Microsoft, with something called Terminal Services that's built into Windows Server 2003, and Metaframe from Citrix Systems. Both providers provide an OS X client that works very well. For those of us on Intel Macs, neither is a universal binary, in fact neither is about a year or so, but they both work extremely well under Rosetta. So you might want to have a word with your company IT people to find out if they use Citrix or Terminal Services, and if so, whether you can gain access to it through your Mac. Just a tip though for dealing with your corporate IT people, please remember that they're probably not used to dealing with Macs unless you have any sort of Mac deployments in your office, and they're not actually paid to look after your Mac if it's not company policy to provide you with Apple gear. So go easy on them, and remember that they'll help you out if you're nice to them. If you don't have access to corporate IT who are offering these sorts of services, you can do something similar yourself at home. If you have an old Windows PC, and plenty of switches will have, then you can do something similar by installing a piece of software called VNC, or Virtual Network Computing. Many of you may already be familiar with this software and might use it to remote control your Macs, but it works just as well in the Windows environment. And if you have an old Windows PC knocking around, or you install VNC on it, then you can connect to that PC from your Mac over the network. VNC works in a very similar way to the thin client software I was talking about previously. Only rather than sending your keystrokes and mouse inputs to a central server, it sends it to the VNC server running on the Windows machine. What it allows you to do is effectively remote control the Windows machine as if you were sat in front of it with a keyboard and screen going. If you already have a Windows machine lying around your house, and you do need occasional access to Windows software, this can be a much more cost-effective and better performing option than using Virtual PC or even running Parallels or something locally on an Intel Mac. Okay, that's all for this time on Fenestration. I hope you enjoyed the segment. Please give me comments back to davidcohen@mymac.com. And back to Tim and Chad.
And for those of you unfamiliar with the word fenestration, Merriam-Webster defines it as the arrangement, proportioning and design of windows and doors in a building, or an opening in a surface as a wall or membrane.
I think that's a cool name.
That is a cool name.
I wonder how long he went and... That was probably something that David has had in his mind to use for a long time.
Oh, I'm sure.
This worked perfect. But, yeah, I liked it. That was a great segment. We really appreciate it, and we really hope to hear more from David Cohen in the future.
Absolutely.
On the My Mac Mini podcast, when we actually start that, which will probably be next week.
Yeah.
Sometimes the contributing editors of the segments kind of, hey, back to you, Tim and Chad. Robert does that. And,
yeah.
Or John Nemirovsky, Nemo, will, you know, address us directly in his. So, here's the thing. Sometimes they record ahead of time.
Right.
1 or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to use those segments in a separate podcast if they're referring to something that we're doing here on the show. So this is kind of an open call to them as well. Please be aware that we're going to move this to... What do you think of the name? The My Mac Mini podcast.
I like it.
I like it too, because it plays on the Mac Mini name.
Yeah.
So I think we'll stick with that one.
Mm-hmm.
We want to thank smalldog.com for sponsoring this podcast. They've been with us for a long time, and I did an interview with them last week. I mentioned on the last podcast that I'd actually recorded that interview that day. And I got a chance to listen to the podcast this last weekend, and I actually sound somewhat intelligent on that podcast, which was quite surprising.
I thought, wow, I sound pretty...
Wow, they must have done a heavy editing or something.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was way, you know, and that was on a telephone interview as well, so the sound quality wasn't the greatest. And we've had that problem here. We got some feedback over the week from last week when we did the interview, and it was over a cell phone, and quite honestly, it sounded horrible. The person speaking, he was brilliant.
Right.
The problem was the audio quality.
Right.
So we may have one or two more cell phone interviews to get through, but pretty much from this point moving forward,
we're going to try to keep things on Skype and iChat, capturing them in Audio Hijack Pro like we've been doing, because that provides you with the best sound quality, and frankly, we like to listen to it too.
And then we can go in afterwards and manipulate that sound file and to make the other side of the conversation more robust, loud, sounds good. It sounds like they're in the same room with us in a lot of them. You go back to... Who?
Al Luckow.
He was on Skype, and that sounded great. Kevin Reeves, who, by the way...
Slough.
Well, Kevin Reeves, I want to obviously give a shout-out to him, because he wrote and composed our theme music. Our theme music isn't some canned soundtrack.
No.
That's only for this podcast, and it was written specifically for this podcast by Kevin Reeves. He has a new album out. Go to kevinreeves.com. Chan and I both really like listening to his music.
Yep.
We're not saying that because he did our theme. He's really good.
He's really good.
So, check that out. I was talking about...
your problems with the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and I do want to get into that, but first of all, I want to jump over to a dashboard minute and see what's going on with Guy.
You're listening to the Dashboard Minute, right here on the MyMac.com podcast. Hi, everyone, and welcome again to the Dashboard Minute. I have two very cool widgets to talk about today that are kind of different. I hope you'll enjoy them, and will send me feedback at dbminute@gmail.com. I'm also looking for widgets that might not have made it to Apple's dashboard site. I usually ask at the end of the segment, but I'm throwing it out now, hoping for some kind of response from dashboard authors. Before I begin, there is some widget news. In Apple's latest OS X update, there is a little bit of fluff that you may have heard about from various news sites around the web. Apparently, Apple added a little phone home feature to Dashboard that every 8 hours calls Apple and compares your list of widgets with the ones in their database to make sure that no bad widgets have been downloaded. Some pundits have made a lot of noise about this, while others have mostly downplayed it as being no big deal. I probably don't have to tell you which side is pro-PC and which is pro-Apple. How important is this and what are the repercussions? I have no idea. I imagine the real story is probably somewhere in the middle. I'll keep an eye on this, and if anything develops beyond the hype, I'll let you know. The first widget today is a music search widget that works a little different. This widget looks at your iTunes collection, specifically the artists that are there, and then goes to Amazon.com to look for the latest releases by those artists. It's called New Tunes, and it was created by Jim George. Simply fire this widget up, make sure that the artist list is selected in the bar, click the round double arrow icon, and New Tunes starts up iTunes, searches all of your artists in your library, and then goes out and searches Amazon.com for any new or recent releases. Once the search is complete, select the new albums bar, and every new release is listed. The little dollar symbol on the right for each album will take you out of dashboard and fire up your web browser directly to Amazon for the page with that selection. If there is some artist that you don't want to search for, just click the green check mark in the artist search window, and all entries for that artist will not appear in the list of new releases. Very slick. While I wish widgets like this would show the page that they are going to instead of dropping out of dashboard, this is really a minor quibble. Obviously, you'll need internet access to make this work. I really like this widget, and you can find it at Jim George's website, which is www.jim-george.com. Okay, here's the hard part. /newtunes, all one word, /index.html. It can also be found at macupdate.com. Last one for today is a widget created to check lotto results worldwide. Over 200 different ones from all over the world, in fact. It's called, naturally, the Lotto Widget. Created by a UK company called Kiske Net Media, it couldn't be simpler to use. Just hit the little round tiny eye, which is the info button. Select your lotto that you want to check, hit the done key, and the widget will do its wraparound and show you the last results for the lottery that you've just wasted lots of your hard-earned cash for. Find this widget at Apple's dashboard site and at other dashboard-related sites. You can also check the show notes for this podcast for links to both of these widgets. As I said earlier, if you have a favorite widget that you would like me to talk about, I can be contacted via email at dbminute@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time on the Dashboard Minute on the MyMac.com podcast.
Thanks again, Guy, for another great Dashboard Minute. You sound great. Earlier on, I was talking about my problems with my MacBook and the failed RAM. One good way to avoid failed RAM is to order it from Ramjet.
Ramjet, you know, they guarantee all the RAM. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, you can get bad RAM anywhere.
Right.
The people selling it, they don't have any control on how it was made.
Mm-hmm.
What they do have a control over is what they guarantee and how they take care of their customers.
Yeah.
In this instance, yours was factory-installed RAM from Apple.
Right.
You got it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy your RAM from Ramjet.com, same deal.
Yep.
Not going to have a problem. So thank you, Ramjet, very much. Go to Ramjet.com for being our sponsor, and cool beans.
Yep. And if you're like me, you're probably going to go there to upgrade your RAM because they only sent me 512 meg.
Yeah. That's all I've got in the MacBook Pro as well, so I'm going to have to look at getting at least another gig. Speaking of my MacBook Pro, I've hinted at it a few times on the show, so it's time to get into it. What happened was, after I opened up my MacBook, as I've said on past shows, I use a PowerBook G4 100 mm-hmm. or 1 gigahertz machine. Absolutely love it. It's been, quite honestly, the most dependable Mac I've ever owned.
It's
and
a rock.
That really says something, because
yeah.
it's... I've owned a lot of Macs, obviously. And I've pounded on that machine, but it still looks like it's in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it looks almost brand new, except for one little...
ding in the corner.
But you can't even see that unless I point it out.
Yeah.
And I just really like that machine, so I was hesitant to go ahead and get a MacBook Pro simply because I like the machine so much. But I thought, you know, we're doing a lot of reviews. I've already got a top-of-the-line G5. I really need an Intel machine so I can start testing software and hardware on that as well and give the perspective from... Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hearing things funny. My left ear's clogged. From both sides, you know, the Intel machines as well as the PowerPC machines.
Yep.
Hence the MacBook Pro. After I opened it here last week, I went home, immediately did a FireWire target mode, transferred all my information from the PowerBook over to the MacBook Pro. Fired up the MacBook Pro, I don't know, 40 minutes later, and it acted just like my PowerBook. Everything was hunky-dory great.
Delightful.
Loved it. It was fast. I loved the glowing keyboard. That really blew me away. The screen seems brighter. I haven't really done a side-by-side comparison check yet, but
yeah,
it seems a little bit brighter. The machine also seems much, much warmer in my lap than the PowerBook
G4. And I have noticed the same thing with my MacBook. It is much hotter than my G3 laptop.
I think that's a major problem. I really do.
Yeah.
But that's not the problem I had. The very next day, I wake up the MacBook from sleep. It will not see the wireless network. The wireless network in my house is an Airport Extreme base station. Here's the thing. The Mac Mini is on the same wireless network. It sees the Airport network and uses it just fine. The PowerBook G4 saw it, used it just fine, no problem. Those are the only two wireless machines I've got on my network. Everything else is wired. The G4 tower, that's a dual processor, 500 megahertz, kind of just a backup server more than anything else. It's off most of the time anyways, but that's wired. And the G5. And the G5 is wired as well. So, why couldn't the MacBook Pro see it? And well, actually, it did see it. It just couldn't join the network.
Right.
It said, you're connected to this network. You're not connected to the internet. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I knew I had to upgrade the software on the Airport base station.
Yeah.
I downloaded it a long time ago, but whenever I try to run it, or whenever I go to the Airport system administrator software, it would see the base station just fine. But I couldn't, every time it tried to connect, it said, cannot read something, or I could not log into that Extreme base station. And it's been that way for like 4 or 5 months. I didn't really think much of it because the PowerBook and the Mac Mini is using it just fine.
Right.
So I thought, well, something's goofy. Maybe it's with the software. Maybe I need to reset the Airport base station. I don't know. I'm not worried about it. So when the MacBook Pro could see it but couldn't join it, it kind of came, that was a problem. And I tried everything. I reset the base station, did everything I could possibly think of, including a hard reset and a soft reset. Nothing would allow me to log in to as an administrator and upgrade the software on the Airport base station. So I thought, okay, it looks like for whatever reason, my Airport base station has gone bad. What am I going to do? Well, I went and ordered actually, it's this exactly the same router you have, a wireless router, a Netgear wireless router. And that's the G, so it's even faster than the Airport Extreme. So I was looking forward to getting it, and that actually came today. In the meantime, I was experiencing major problems with my cable provider, Comcast.
Right.
I kept losing internet connectivity for an hour at a time.
Yeah, we had the same problem yesterday.
No, I've been having this problem for months.
Really?
Yep. And I kept calling, and anytime I call, it just happened to be working at that moment, and they're like, oh, I don't see anything wrong, sir.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, it really ticks me off. So finally I got the right person on the phone, Monday, I want to say, and they sent out a repair crew. This person came out and said, your modem is too old. We upgraded our network back in January, and your modem isn't supported, your cable modem. So they gave me a new cable modem. Everything was fine and dandy. But up until that point, I had retired the MacBook Pro and kept using my PowerBook because that I can get on the wireless network. And quite honestly, if I can't get on the wireless network, no notebook is worth anything to me.
Correct.
You know, it's like, well, I'm just going to set it aside until I can get the new router, wireless router in, and then I'll use it that way. So they put the new cable modem in, and I thought, I'm going to see if I can see that base station now. Sure enough, I could. The problem all this time wasn't the MacBook Pro.
Your archaic modem.
It was my and I couldn't connect the Airport Extreme software on the Mac itself. Could not connect for whatever reason to my base station. As soon as I changed my cable modem, boom, I logged right into it, upgraded to version 5.7. The MacBook Pro saw the network immediately and started surfing.
Cool.
So, obviously, I'm very happy, but what a roundabout way of going about things.
Yeah.
Here's this new MacBook Pro. I can't use it. I'm thinking something's wrong with the MacBook Pro. In fact, after I had migrated the G4 data to the MacBook Pro, and I couldn't connect to the network, I thought something probably happened in the migration.
Yeah.
So I actually completely erased the hard drive and started from scratch, and still couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And once I saw it last night, I went ahead and did the data migration again, and it's working just fine.
Mm.
But it just goes to show you that who would have thought to fix my airport base station connection problems, I had to get a new cable modem.
Yeah.
I mean, it that's not intuitive.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't seem like... Obviously, it's on the path before it hits the Airport Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't put the two together.
Yeah.
And it was by sheer coincidence that I actually tried to see if I connect to it after I got... This is a little hunch. I thought, I'm going to see if I could connect to that. And I could. So there's nothing wrong with my base station, my Airport Extreme base station.
Mm-hmm.
Works great. I'm happy. And what shows up in the mail today? The new router.
Yeah.
So now I have two routers.
You going to send the other one back?
You know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to configure it so it acts more as... I'm forgetting the word I'm looking for.
A repeater?
A repeater, thank you. So it's the same network. I'll just have much greater range.
Yeah.
I'll probably put it in the kitchen because that's where I use the MacBook Pro the most.
Right.
So I should get a really strong signal that way.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I mean, if there's nothing wrong with the Airport Extreme base station, there's no reason to replace it.
Right.
At least that's kind of the way I think.
That's how I think.
And I will say, though, that my download speeds on my cable modem increased significantly once I got the new modem. And so that's obviously a good thing.
Yeah.
So now I have the MacBook. I've only been using it realistically for about 2 days. I used it the first day. But here's the weird thing. When I first migrated, the first day I used it, that night, after we did the podcast, it saw and used the wireless network.
Hmm.
And then the next day when I woke it up from sleep, it would not connect.
Yeah.
That's what was driving me crazy. I was like, it just worked the night before.
Hmm.
So, it's finally working. I can't really say if I like the MacBook Pro more or less. The speed increase, obviously, is nice.
Yeah.
But I don't have a laptop for speed reasons. I mean, I have a G5. That's... And everybody's like, "Oh, it's almost as fast." No, it's not even close to being as fast as my G5.
No.
There's no comparison. My G5 wipes the floor with it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a listen to what do we got up next? No Snooze?
No Snooze Reviews with John Emerovsky.
Before we begin this edition of Nemo's MyMac.com podcast reviews you can use that won't make you snooze, I'd like to offer my congratulations to Chad and Tim on their new Mac laptops they have just obtained. And, of course, we're looking forward to exciting reviews of those products, hint, hint, plus any things you can do on those computers that you could not do previously. Also, I want to voice my support for my two terrific comrades, Robert and Guy, for their outstanding speedy reviews and dashboard minutes. I'm a regular listener. I wouldn't miss him for anything. Keep up the great work, all four of you. What we're reviewing this week is something that's hidden in plain sight. Every week, Apple offers a pair of songs free at no charge to anyone who has iTunes either for Mac or Windows, as long as you have an Apple ID and you are registered with them to purchase items from the Apple iTunes Music Store. If you don't already have an Apple account and an Apple ID, you go to store.apple.com and click in the upper right where it says Sign In or Create, your own personal account. Once you have your Apple ID, and most of you, I expect, already have one, once you launch iTunes, over on the left side in the Source panel, click on Music Store. Wait a couple of seconds for the store to come up and all of the display of the current offerings. And then scroll down to the bottom, and you will see at the bottom left of the main large panel an opportunity to get free downloads. Because I'm recording this the week ahead that you're going to hear it, it happens to say the free downloads at the moment are called The Presets and Rocky Lynn. Those are the groups or artists that have the free downloads. And once you click on that, you just click that you're going to buy the song. Let's see if I can do it while I'm talking. I click on The Presets. It's called The Girl in the Sea. And over on the right side, it says Price Free. Get the song. I type in my iTunes ID, if it's not already logged in from automatically connecting. And then a minute or two later, I've got the songs over on my left side in my Source panel where it says Purchased Music. Yep, there they are. Girl in the Sea by The Presets and Red, White, and Blue, How Patriotic by Rocky Lynn. One was electronic and one was country. I then listen to the songs on my computer or my iPod, and if I want to keep them, I keep them. If I don't want to keep them, no hard feelings, they're gone. In general, out of the 8 or so songs I download every month, I usually keep one. So the percentages are not high because I have pretty finicky taste and already a very large library, and I tend not to like the current pop tunes. But when something's good, I keep it. And I give Apple a very, very high rating and a wonderful thank you for these free songs that are offered every week as free downloads on the iTunes Music Store. Let me know what some of your favorites are, and thank you for listening to the MyMac.com podcast, Nemo's Reviews You Can Use That Won't Make You Snooze. Signing off till next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another speedy review from Robert at MyMac.com. Boy, I got a fun one for you today. Today I'm going to talk to you about the GorillaPod. What's the GorillaPod, you say? Well, it's an extremely flexible, compact tripod for your point-and-shoot cameras. It's small enough to fit in almost any camera bag. It only stands about 6-7 inches tall, and it retails for about $25. Of course, you can save $5 if you opt out of the retail packaging. In other words, you can buy it online without the plastic case that you normally get when you buy in the store and save yourself $5. Okay, I know what you're saying to yourself. What am I going to do with a 6-inch tripod? How could that be handy to me? Well, this is not your average tripod, folks. It's very flexible. It has a number of little flexible ball joints that allow it to be molded and shaped into almost anything. I've clipped it on top of my computer monitor. I've hung it from a lampshade. I've put it just about everywhere that you could think of, and then set up my camera using the timer and taken some pretty handy pictures that I couldn't normally get without asking someone else to take the picture for me. Well, folks, like I said, that was a fun one. It's the GorillaPod by Joby. That's Joby.com. Check it out for yourself. Thanks for listening. This has been Robert from MyMac.com with another speedy review. Take it away, Tim.
And thank you very much, Robert. This segment of the MyMac podcast is sponsored by InnoTech, InnoTech.com.
InnoTech has been the host of the MyMac.com website for over 8 years now.
And if you downloaded this podcast, you downloaded it directly from InnoTech. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. If you guys are looking for web hosting, check them out. You get just A-plus customer service. And to me, good customer service is worth... To me, that's worth more than saving maybe $5 a month on a hosting bill. So if customer service is important to you, that's where you want to go. Mm-hmm. So that's our podcast this week. No, I'm just kidding. We're not done yet. If you didn't notice, if you're a regular listener, there was no news this week.
No.
Just a slow news week. An Apple VP in Japan quit. Okay.
Whoop-de-doo.
Woohoo! You know, that's kind of... I think it's just that time of the year. We went through this a year ago where you just don't get a whole lot of news.
Mm-hmm.
And the other podcasts I listen to that are more tech-centric, they're not... Twit, for instance, this last Twit was kind of boring to me. I'm sitting there listening to it, and I'm like, they're really not talking about anything that's all that pressing or, there's topics out there that I would like to eventually talk about, but a lot of times I just don't feel like getting political.
Yeah.
You know. Next week, we do have a scheduled guest.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it?
I believe we have Guy Kawasaki next week.
If you know who he is, that means you've been using Macs for a long time. Guy Kawasaki, at a time where nowadays when Apple gets press, it's always good press.
Right.
When Apple comes out with a new product nowadays, it's all... I mean, Apple can release a hugely expensive speaker for the iPod. That's just way more money than it should be.
Right.
And a $100 slip case for an iPod, $100 for a little stupid slip case.
Yeah.
It's on your local news. Apple released blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yay, Apple got on the news. But you know, back in the day, the only thing that you ever heard about Apple was their imminent doom.
Yep.
Apple is going out of business. Apple's market share dropped to a negative 4.8 today, and pundits predict that Apple will be out of business, or Sun Microsystems is rumored to be looking at Apple, and Sony's going to buy Apple, and it was always bad news.
Oracle's going to buy Apple.
Yeah. Oracle is, who is the head of Oracle?
Larry
Ellis.
Yep.
Is going to team up with Steve Jobs, and they're going to have a hostile takeover, and I remember all those rumors.
Yep.
And the reason that most of them came to seed was because financially, Apple wasn't doing very good. Now, we did an interview just a few months ago with Gil Emilio, in which we talked about what it really took to turn Apple around at that time, and that Steve Jobs gets a lot of the credit that really isn't Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, last week we even mentioned that you know, unless Steve Jobs, he was there for like 6 weeks before the iMac was released, and yet he gets all the credit for that computer and its success. That was Gil Emilio, no question. But what happened... what about the average Mac user at the time? How did they fight back this negative stereotype of how bad things are at Apple and all the negative reporting on the Macintosh? There was an emailing list called the Evangelist, and the person that set it up was Guy Kawasaki, and he was very influential in keeping, I guess you would say, the core Mac heads centered together. Kept them in the camp, sent them out to attack people who attacked the Mac. And I think he played a very important role, and I think a lot of the people that are enjoying the Macintosh nowadays that didn't back then owe a lot of thanks to Guy Kawasaki. He did a lot for the platform.
Yeah.
More than most people did. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, see what he's up to now. I know he works at Garage.com. It's a startup, venture capitalist type of thing.
Yeah.
And he's got a blog out there that I read that quite a bit. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. We've got a lot of stuff right now going on up at the MyMac.com website. In fact, one of the things that I had last week, but I had to have someone reformat it because they embedded pictures in their review.
What?
Was a review of the Microsoft Laser Wireless Desktop Keyboard and Mouse for Mac.
And that would be me. I did write that review, and I am still using it, although Tim hates the mouse.
I do. I like Microsoft. We gave one or two of these. We gave one of these away.
With a copy of Office 2004.
Which I use every day. That's a suite of applications that I can't live without.
Right.
And we've interviewed people at Microsoft in the past. We have a very good relationship with Microsoft.
Yep.
Obviously, they're probably not very happy with your review. You scored a 3.5 out of 5.
Right.
And obviously, that was Chad's opinion. Had I done the review, I probably would have went 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
I think that... I think it looks cheap. I think the keys feel cheap. I do like the palm rest. That's kind of nice. The plastic itself, there's nothing special about it.
Right.
the ergonomic shape of the keys and the keyboard itself.
Mm-hmm.
You could get those anywhere now for $20.
Yeah.
At office supply stores all over the mm-hmm. place. The mouse to me doesn't feel very responsive.
Hmm.
It feels like it's skipping on me. Like I have to go really slow to get exactly where on the screen where I want to go. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just because I'm not used to it.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. I really don't. So I'm glad that you did the review and you're stuck with it now. Because I don't want one of these.
Well, what I looked at was I looked at my previous setup, which was a Microsoft optical mouse, two button scroll mouse,
yep.
and the standard Apple, Mac G5 yeah. keyboard. And I basically said, well, what are my pluses and minuses? Do I have a preference? And in all honesty, I probably don't really have a preference, which is why I kind of gave it an average score.
Because one of the things that you have to look at, though, is you're going to have to change the batteries in both the keyboard and the mouse.
So this is true.
That's an added expense on top of a $100 keyboard-mouse combo
mm-hmm.
that, depending on how often you use your mouse and keyboard, for some people, they're going to go through batteries much more quickly.
Right.
You could buy rechargeables, but those are even more money.
Right.
So I agree with, for your score, for you, mm-hmm. and probably for the average person, your score is probably more indicative of the quality and the value.
Yeah.
Mine would have been even lower simply because I don't like it. But that's what a review is.
That's true.
You know, we had and I thought this was really, really interesting. The day after we posted last week's podcast,
mm-hmm.
Klaus Wolf, our Berlin...
correspondent.
No. Yep.
Our desk chief.
No, Berlin...
Bureau chief,
that's yes. what it is. Sent an article and we posted called Network Attached Storage for My Home Office. Absolutely a great article. Really appreciate him writing and sending that in. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read it, go check it out. It's, you know what? You here going back to David Cohen's segment on today's podcast,
mm-hmm.
Macs in a PC World.
Yep.
It's just a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, Klaus's review or article, and it's kind of a review of SharePoints as well. Really, really timely and well done.
Yes.
Go ahead. I can barely talk today.
All right. We also have Kibbles and Bytes from Small Dog Electronics. Make sure you read through that. Always good information there. We've got Maxpiration 43 from Donnie Yankolo. Easy online albums with Homepage and .Mac.
Homepage isn't Claire's Homepage, the old application. It's mm-hmm. Homepage on .Mac.
Yep.
And like we already talked about, the review from Chad Perry. Russ Walkowicz reviewed the Mercury On-The-Go Pro FireWire 800 hard drive. So if you're in need of some extra hard drive space you want to check out, that's a smaller hard drive. He actually has a picture of the drive sitting in his hand. Mm-hmm. And it has this kind of this clear look to it, so you can actually see the actual hard drive inside of it.
Yep.
And as well as like the...
dip switches.
Yeah, it's yeah. really neat looking. I like the look, overall look of it. David Weeks reviewed the Firelight Express Smart Disk.
Mm-hmm. Interesting products. Got a little LCD display to show you when you last downloaded to it.
Yeah, I think that's that was a good review. Because mm-hmm. that was a product that I was actually kind of thinking, well, maybe I could use something like that. And then after I read his review, I went, nah, no, probably not. I don't really need that. Actually, John Farr, mm-hmm. really good friend. He used to be at AppleLinks.com for years and years and years, doing some blog posting and some reviews at MyMac.com. Mm-hmm. You can check him out at Farr.com, I believe. Is it Farr.com?
Nope, Grack.
No, well, Grack, well, Grack is the name of his yeah.
website.
No, yeah. it's jhfar.com. Ah. Yeah. And he's got a really interesting post called MacBook Pro and CD Warning on the blog side. Basically, mm-hmm. he brought out an old CD and tried to load it up on his MacBook Pro, or his MacBook.
Yep.
Didn't work. And there's a really good discussion going on in that blog post about mm-hmm. what do you do, and we've talked about on this podcast, mm-hmm. for long-term storage options.
Right.
Everything that we're using right now is eventually going to become obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you were writing manuscripts 20 years ago and saving them to 5 1/4 inch floppy drive on your IBM 286,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to get that information
or
now?
Or even on 3 1/2 inch drive on your old
Mac
Classic, yeah.
Yeah. How are you going to get that information nowadays?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if that disk or CD or DVD or external hard drive goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Palmer actually contributed to the article discussion where he's like, I actually have t- two external FireWire drives.
Mm-hmm.
I back up to both. That way, if one goes down, I replace that one and back up to it again.
Yeah.
So you always have redundancy. And that's what I do at home. I've got a 250 gigabyte and a 300... No. It's a 350 and a 400 gigabyte
mm-hmm.
external FireWire hard drive on the G5, and they both mirror each other.
Yeah.
Is, you know, sometimes they don't. Sometimes I'll drag one to the other and I forget. But
mm-hmm.
I also have a blog post called "Is AOL Dead?"
Yeah,
I think it is. it's not doing well. Lastly, I've got a featured article up there on what to do with your old iMac.
Yep.
The discussion underneath that was pretty fun. I actually made a little cartoon for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of stupid. And
yeah, but it's still fun to look at.
So we have got a lot of content up at MyMac.com. We invite everyone listening to go up to MyMac.com. If you want to post, you want to add your comments, simply register to the site.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have to worry about your email getting sold or anything like that.
Yep.
We just don't allow anonymous postings anymore because we got hit by evil spam bots and
oh, yeah.
child porn and gambling and all that kind of crap was being linked on our website in the comments. Mm-hmm. And we just, I can't have that.
Right.
And... I'm sorry.
Well, and it makes it very unpleasant to read the blog postings when you see a long string of code and stupid links. So.
Yes, and going to very inappropriate websites right. that we in no way support.
Right.
So that's just kind of the way it has to be, that mm-hmm. you just have to register, and next time you visit your site, it'll remember who you are, and
mm-hmm.
you can post comments all day long if you want. We've got thousands and thousands of people registered on the site. Unfortunately, I've noticed... not everybody posts comments.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the stats, and, you know, I can see 100,000 people read this certain article, and yet only two people posted their comments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but I guess it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So that's our show for this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully with the interview with Guy Kawasaki. I'm hopeful that he'll make it. But, you know, he's a busy guy, and sometimes things kind of fall through, and
mm-hmm.
you don't get to interview the people that you want to. We do have another... It's not really planned yet, but we're talking to somebody about interviewing them.
Yeah.
And that will...
Maybe that'll come to fruition.
Yeah. It's a Big Mac person, so
yeah.
that'll be fun. We definitely want to hear about your horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, Halloween horror stories.
Your service support horror stories.
Tech stories. What did Dell do to you? You can tell us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be gentle. And it'll be our secret. We won't tell anyone.
Yep. And we are also looking for contributors to our podcast number 100.
Yeah. What are we asking for?
We are asking them to tell us what they love about the Mac.
And what being a Mac user means to you. We've mm-hmm. got a few people that's contributed to that.
Yep.
All they have to do is pick up telephone and dial
1-801-938-5559, and you can be on podcast number 100.
The plan originally was Chad and I weren't going to do much of anything for podcast 100. We were going to turn it over to comments like that.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't get enough comments like that, then we'll probably still do something. And
yeah.
then some of the comments that I have got was very garbled. Mm. It sounded like someone was calling from the Lincoln Tunnel on their cell phone while blasting Metallica in the background, and I can't really use that because yeah. they're like, you know, I'm like, oh, I can't use that on the show.
So but use a landline. That will help.
Yeah, that will help, unless you got a really good cell connection.
Yeah.
So that's our 55 minutes this week, and we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.